Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A six-year-old boy accidentally shoots a classmate. Westboro Baptist Church goes to Mississippi and gets its butt whooped. And it's 420, so you know that means. That's right, the one-year anniversary of the BP oil spill.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves and your families, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. Three kindergarten students were hurt Tuesday when a gun fell from a six-year-old boy's pocket and discharged in the Houston area. The boy was wounded in the foot, and two of his classmates, a six-year-old boy and a five-year-old girl, also suffered minor injuries. Police do not yet know how the child acquired the pistol, which went off at 10:22 a.m. in the cafeteria of Ross Elementary School.
The father had it for hunting.
I think the answer to that question is, this was in Texas. Some parents said the incident made them think twice about safety at the school, and they're wondering if additional security measures are needed. A six-year-old named Kennedy Glapion, who was there at the time, said, "It dropped on the floor under the table. It was loud. It was so loud."
I don't really understand. I thought that was a thing that didn't actually happen, where you dropped a gun and it just went off.
I guess if the safety's off, I guess it can happen.
Thought you had to, what do you call it, pull the trigger.
I don't know.
Did it fall onto someone's finger?
Maybe it did.
It's all very confusing. I mean, was it a musket of some kind? Was it a... All right. Well, whatever. Hold on. Let me get this blunderbuss so I can take it to kindergarten.
Other kindergartners were reportedly upset by the incident.
Yeah, I would imagine so. What with the shooting and the, hey, I've been hit by a bullet.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Another child, not getting your man on the street so much, your child on the street, Jarnicia Broussard, 5.
That does sound like a Texas name.
She told the Houston Chronicle, "I knew it was a gun because a gun goes pow."
Yes.
I got really scared.
Also, it hits you with bullets and you bleed.
Yes.
So that's one of the other giveaways, although they are like roaches in that way. Not the children in Texas. I'm talking about guns.
That you know.
All right. Well, I mean, to the best of my knowledge, I don't really know. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later in this hour, your Science on the March, also entertainment news. And you can get this program later on the day via iTunes if you like. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at Legion of News.
Portlandorican.com, and you can take it with you. You can take it on the run, as Kevin What's His Guts used to say. Kevin, the guy, not Kevin McCarthy.
No.
Not
not Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall.
No, not Kevin Seal from 120 Minutes.
No.
Not Kevin Nealon from SNL.
Kevin Costner from Waterworld.
I did too, though. You got to do too.
Oh. I was trying to think of the last name of the kid who was Kevin on The Wonder Years.
Not Kevin Spacey.
Not Kevin Spacey. Not Kevin Klein.
You're still one down.
Oh, crap. I got nothing.
Did you already say Kevin, the older brother in The Wonder Years?
I was going to say Kevin Mahegan, but that was a kid I grew up with, so that wouldn't count. I could just be making that up.
That doesn't count.
He used to come over to my house and put on my clothes.
Great story, Don. You can take this with you if you like. It's mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. He didn't do that after taking the clothes off of you.
No, he would come over and rummage through my house and my stuff and put on my clothes. And I remember complaining to my mother and saying I thought it was weird that Kevin Mahegan would come over and put on my clothes. And she said I had to be nice to him because he was different.
Yes. Well, he likes to feel pretty, and which of us does not? Mobile.cascadia.fm, that is how you can take the program with you. And, of course, next hour at rickemersonshow.com, the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy amuses people the world over. That is rickemersonshow.com. Today, Democracy on the March, Taser Watch, and we'll talk to Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week, and we'll count down the top five. Today, we'll do the top five songs that I had inflicted upon me by my parents growing up. That is next hour at rickemersonshow.com. This is Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor.
I'm just thinking how sad it is that I can't remember the last name of some of the men I've dated, but I can remember Kevin Mahegan. Okay, just a thought.
Okay. This is one of those things where I was going to say I had like five different comments that were all sort of fighting for triage space in my mouth to get out, but then I realized that any one of them would just take us down this long sort of conversational arterial, and then we would never get actually anything done this hour. Mm-hmm. And people don't, here's the thing, the people don't pay us to natter during
That's
Legion
true.
Of News.
No. They want to hear what's going on
That's
in
right.
the world.
That's right.
Like this story, for example.
Exactly.
It's the one-year anniversary of the BP oil spill that fouled the Gulf of Mexico. Doug Inkley with the National Wildlife Federation, and that's an appropriate name, did a survey around the area just yesterday, and he said he's still finding pollution.
Oil about an inch thick on the borders of the wetlands. What this was doing was killing the vegetation, making these areas more prone to washing away erosion and continued destruction of the wetlands.
You know, because I got to tell you, it's like I have a slice of pizza, and I find that just like an hour and a half later, I'm still going, yeah, and like rubbing my hands on paper towel that I've washed 3, 4, 5, 6 times. And then I'll go to use the trackpad on my MacBook. And I'm like, God, mother. And I find that I still got grease all over me. So I got to give myself a good. And finally, I just have to go and I just have to give myself a good 20 mule team boraxing. So I can't imagine, like an oil tanker space. It seems like that's a lot.
Well, there is a huge amount of oil out there. I was heard a story, I think it was on public radio yesterday, that the beaches that are most commonly populated by tourists were cleaned to a depth of 3 feet in the sand. They went that far down to clean the beaches. Beaches and shoreline in other areas where they don't get tourists, they only cleaned down a couple of inches because, it's for one thing, it's actually bad to overclean the dirt, I guess. But the thing is that even if you're on like the nice pristine beach and going, oh, look how nice everything is now, hooray, if you dug down 3 feet, you'd still find like the seepage of grunge and tar and oil.
No, it is one of those places that's enjoyable from a distance. Maybe the distance being you looking into a postcard of it from an earlier era. But if you go there and you, well, it's like any place. I mean, the Pacific Ocean is like that. I mean, if you go to the West Coast, you don't have to go very far offshore, the Oregon coast. I mean, I'm not even talking about like a Coos Bay or something. You just go out like deep sea fishing and you don't get too far off coast. You start seeing just the ever-present globules of crude oil just floating, which is, whatever. I mean, I'm beyond thinking that we're going to like keep the joint all nice and spick and span. That's not going to happen. But it is just indicative of how insidious oil is, because oil and water, you can't really get it out.
I grew up by the beach in Southern California, and there were petroleum refineries along that area. And, it was, you'd enjoy a nice happy day of romping at the beach, but then you'd go home and try and scrub the tar off the bottoms of your feet.
It is Kevin Cronin, Mario Speedwagon. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Inkley with the National Wildlife Federation says there needs to be money dedicated to fixing the problem over the long haul.
What we need to have happen is for Congress to enact legislation that would dedicate the fines levied against BP for this oil spill to long-term Gulf Coast restoration in this area.
There needs to be some sort of, they need to market some sort of a like a fundraising, like a specialty niche version of SpongeBob, where he's just kind of going, and he, you know, he's just covered in crude oil and can't move, where he just sort of flails. Maybe that's a bad idea.
No.
It's one of those days where I can't quite tell the good ideas from the terrible ideas.
Well, in a similar sort of an idea, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is turning to Facebook and Twitter to educate the public about Northwest salmon. Sammy the Salmon will tweet and offer regular updates to follow the progress of spring Chinook, released near the Canadian border to the Pacific Ocean.
Sammy the Salmon.
Sammy the Salmon.
Okay.
He's on Twitter and Facebook. The fish have been raised in the Winthrop National Fish Hatchery. Sammy isn't a real fish. Just a fictional representation of the fish that passed nine dams and countless other obstacles.
Sadly, this is a real news story, not a fictional representation of news stories.
Yes.
The reporter doesn't have a real brain, though, just so you know.
I'm really proud of the folks at, I think I picked this up either on KGW or KPTV, I'm not sure which.
Sammy the
person
Salmon.
Who felt it was necessary to write, Sammy isn't a real fish.
Now, to be fair, do we know
Twitter.
That could be a thing that just was in the press release, though. I mean, you've seen those press releases come in where it's like there's just some guy.
But if you're rewriting it to put in your newspaper.
Rewriting.
That's the thing.
Did they still have people who do that now? I think they fired all of those people.
Somebody had to rearrange the press release to put it and paste it into Quark and turn or
just scanning it and just sticking it in the paper. Done.
The agency says the intent of the 8-week social media project is to provide entertaining and informational messages regarding a key Northwest species. But I think in a typical, as is often the case with things like that, since they have no idea what they're doing, Sammy the Salmon's, would you imagine that Sammy the Salmon's Twitter handle would be?
Well, you can't do Sammy the Salmon too many characters. Sammy Salmon.
No, it's a USFWS Pacific.
Of course. So that was going to be my second guess. That was right on the tip of my tongue.
Yes.
I don't understand.
Congrats on this social media campaign, Fish and Wildlife Service.
Is Sammy like one of those crippled folks that they would always bring to do inspiration where he types with like a stick in his teeth or his mouth where he's just and he's just in front of the H E L L O enter.
He just swims back and forth in the tank and like points at letters all day. It's exhausting.
Is this because they were just? Was there some? Is the animal kingdom? Are they all jealous of that the cobra from the Bronx Zoo? And now they're all just jostling for the top of the social media pyramid in the animal world.
That's it. We'll have like beavers and muskrats twittering next.
Okay, somebody right now. I want somebody to start a Twitter account where you are in fact twittering as a tapeworm lurking deep within one of Sammy's intestines. You know, like somewhere down in his alimentary canal, just a microbe of some kind, maybe something virulent.
The Secretary of Transportation says it was a serious incident when the First Lady's jet was directed to fly too close to a military cargo plane in the same airspace. However, Ray LaHood, Secretary of Transportation,
bad week he's having,
says you shouldn't make too much out of it.
Let's see, this is a plane.
The main thing that I want people to know is that Mrs. Obama was never in danger. What took place is something that we're investigating, and when we finish our investigation, we'll announce the results.
Please don't fire me. Please, please. It's the worst week of my life. Please don't fire me. I need this job. Please.
LaHood says, however, they're not just going to disregard what happened.
We consider any incident like this a serious incident.
For the love of God.
It's under investigation, and we will get to the bottom of what happened.
I have a family.
And how it happened, and obviously make sure it doesn't happen again.
You don't understand. I don't have any other skills.
Friday is National Paint Recycling Day.
Are you just making the day? Let me ask you this. If I were to ask you this question, Don, are you just taking a bunch of stories from the trash that we've decided were too ridiculous to be read on other days and just putting them all into one program? Would I regret asking?
Why not? Can you see how many stories I have here?
It's a lot.
I'm pulling the cream of the crop here.
Okay.
Actually, it was kind of a slow news day.
The idea that that might be true just scares the hell out of me, really, in terms of our world and the planet on which we live.
Well, we're also, I like to build. I like to start slow and build to what I personally think are the really interesting stories.
You started slow with a kindergartner shooting somebody else with a gun.
Yeah, but it didn't happen here in Portland. Well, I don't know. But yes. We always, I was going to say you lead with a joke, but that doesn't really work.
No.
If it bleeds, it leads, Rick Emerson. That was what I learned in journalism school, which I didn't actually attend, but people who went to journalism school told me
Can I just tell you, and there's somebody, many people have made this observation, that is just... That is the worst possible thing when you are like on, you are the guy who's clocked in when the president's, you know, the first lady's the plane, you know, it doesn't even have to crash, it just like it'd be bumped by something or like, you know, or just she gets, or just she gets the runs from something she had off the snack cart or something. It's just that is the worst day of your life because you don't ever want to be in the crosshairs of the government ever. I often say that, you know, it's that old joke that I wish the government didn't even know I existed for the most part. I can't imagine, and that's just because I don't like to pay, you know, taxes. I can't imagine if you're just some guy who inadvertently puts the first lady in danger. You are going to find yourself just working, you know, in just the ass end of a gulagian latrine somewhere.
Well, there's a case in court right now. I think they actually just passed judgment on it or something, of the Secret Service versus this guy who sued the Secret Service because he touched Cheney.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
And they, like, wrestled him to the ground and beat the crap out of him and threw him in jail. And that's all he did is he touched Cheney, like, on the shoulder.
Well,
so if you're, like, say, the air traffic controller who directed the First Lady's plane into wrong airspace, it's not just that you're going to, like, get a stern talking to. You're going to have Homeland Security, like, going through your background, taking you into a tiny room and grilling you for 3 days, and then you're going to lose your job.
Well, but let's be honest, though. It doesn't matter. No matter what, you know, in some, you know, not that we wish for any of these things to happen, we wish for all of our elected officials and their families to live long lives and have the best of health. But I'm just saying, no matter what might inadvertently happen to, let's say, the First Lady, looking at Dick Cheney, I mean, just brushing the hem of his garment, that is a thing that will just have you terminated with the most extreme kind of prejudice. You don't ever want to. I wouldn't even be in the same room as Dick Cheney for fear that I might accidentally do something just to slight him, you know, or just to earn the tiniest bit of his ire. I mean, they'll be finding pieces of you in the carpet for decades.
So I want to read this paint recycling story, but I want to...
I thought I distracted you from that.
No, I want to pose it as sort of a game. It's sort of a puzzle because I want to play a little game called Tell Me If You Can Figure Out What's Wrong with This Story.
We can't play a game called Do This on a Day When I'm Not Here?
No.
Okay.
This will be fun. And you could play that Mario music if you want. That would make it even more fun and game show-like.
No, that's our... That's
no,
our,
really? Okay.
That's our intermission music.
We'll see if you can figure out what is wrong with...
Wait, are you in fact asking that I find game show-y music?
Yeah, if you have it.
Hold on. Let me see if I can find something here. In fact, ironically, or a word like that, I'm going to use the intermission music here. I'm going to use the intermission music while I search for the game show music.
Oh, okay.
All right, hold on.
I mean, I guess I could just read without the...
No, it's too late.
Just sit over here quietly reading to myself.
No. All right.
Oh, okay.
So we'll try this. Because I had to, you know, because I think the only other thing I had was, all I had was this. But I don't want to, no, so we've got this instead. All right, this is the closest I could find to game show music. All right.
Okay, tell me what is wrong with this story.
That's your final answer. I'm sorry.
Friday is National Paint Recycling Day. Portland Mayor Sam Adams declared the day in honor of Earth Day and Oregon's Paint Care program, the only state program of its kind. Paint Care is a nonprofit organization that requires paint manufacturers to safely manage unwanted paint. Go to paintcare.org to find the nearest paint recycling center to you. What is wrong with that story?
Earth Day is not Friday.
No.
Well, that is... Okay.
Oh,
well,
okay.
It's not. Let's have...
All right.
Earth Day isn't Friday. But...
Okay, so there's something else that's wrong with this story. The answer is... How is it that Portland Mayor Sam Adams can declare something National Paint Recycling Day?
Because he's Sam Droid. Honestly, did you have to ask me that? You have shamed yourself and everyone. Think about what you've done for a few minutes.
It's
All right.
But he's a city mayor.
Okay, that's during the day.
Oh.
After this past weekend, he said, honestly, dude, I thought we talked about this. I don't want to, really, I didn't pick this because of Sam Adams. That's an unfortunate coincidence. I swear to God.
No, because you didn't know I was going to mention Sam Adams.
No.
When you started playing.
Well, that was awkward. I don't want to have to disclose his secret identity here.
Oh, all right.
But you forced me into it. How could Sam Adams? Sam Droid.
Oh, sorry.
Didn't you see the photos? He has the costume and the everything and a codpiece.
And so he used his hotline to the White House.
It's Sam Adams. Quick. I need to declare something an International Paint Recycling Day. Bathe me in a series of puce lights. All right.
Oh, sorry. I just started dancing.
All right. By the way, I should pass along that our good friend Seamus says, F Paint Recycling Day. I have paint for my remodeling, and I'm going to dump it down the storm drain just to spite these busybody a-holes.
All right.
Well done.
Yeah.
Okay.
An anonymous source on a Mississippi sports message board is claiming that both citizens and local law enforcement thwarted a protest by Westboro Baptist Church. On Saturday, USMC Staff Sergeant Jason Rogers, who was killed in action in Afghanistan on April 7th, was buried in Brandon, Mississippi. When Sergeant Rogers' body returned to Brandon, it was greeted by hundreds, perhaps even thousands of well-wishers who gathered at the roadside to honor him. There was actually video and a dashboard camera from a Mississippi state trooper that showed how many, just the throngs of people along the road last Thursday. What's most notable about Sergeant Rogers' funeral is that although Westboro Baptist Church had threatened to protest the funeral, they weren't there. From an Ole Miss University sports message board, a fellow wrote that a couple of days before, one of the Westboro protesters, quote, ran his mouth at a Brandon gas station and got his arse waxed, unquote. He wanted to say the police were called.
Are you reading this phonetically?
That's what, well, arse, you know,
okay.
That's. Police were called, and the man who was beaten, apparently, by, I'm unsure if it was police or onlookers, but could not give much of a description of who beat him. When they canvassed the police station and spoke to the large crowd that had gathered around, no one remembered anything about what had happened to him, to the Westboro Baptist guy. So that was a couple of days before the funeral on Saturday, and apparently this guy had spoken about how they were all going to be like protesting the funeral.
Giving him what for?
They showed up. Apparently, they got there to Brandon, Mississippi, and but most of them never made it out of their hotel parking lot. Certain Rankin County pickup trucks were parked directly behind any car that had Kansas license plates in the hotel parking lot. And the drivers mysteriously disappeared until after the funeral was over. Police were called, but their wrecking service was running behind, and they couldn't get any tow trucks out there to move the county vehicles. And then there were a few protesters who made it to the funeral, but they were ushered away to be questioned about a crime that they might possibly have been involved in. But it turned out that after a few hours of questioning, they weren't involved, and they were allowed to go about their business.
It's a really complicated story. This is like reading like a blog post that goes on without line breaks.
Basically, it's like city and county officials decided to just go ahead and harass the Westboro Baptist people and make sure they wouldn't show up at the funeral.
Because that's what governments that should be doing. Government should be harassing people who have opinions that are disagreed with by the majority.
Yeah,
the government should use tax dollars to make sure that people who have minority opinions aren't allowed to speak them.
And to also just completely not deal with an assault and go along with people saying that they had no idea, who beat the guy up. And yes, the Westboro Baptist people are hateful, hateful people. But, these were people who work for county agencies doing this.
I know. This is just one of those things that we have made the observation before. And it's just one of those things that there is never going to be. There is just never going to be any common ground on it. So I've just sort of, it's not that I've quit caring, I've just sort of quit making the point. Because it just seems like, at this point, this is where liberals really do become, to use the cliche, everything that they claim to despise. Because I'm not saying it's just liberals, but I mean, if one presumes that the Westboro Baptist Church is some hyper-aggressive the version of the ultra-extreme far right. If they, in other words, if they have taken, I'm not trying to equate all the conservatives being like the Westboro Baptist Church, but if you sort of assume, if you take it as red, which I think is fair, that they take some of the things espoused by conservatives and they sort of just, they are the, and they've gone all reaver with it. They've just taken it to some sort of extreme. Then it seems like, by definition, the more liberal one is, the more one would be sort of their avowed enemy. But this is where progressives or liberals really do just become everything that they complain about, which is they are really, really happy to see government step in and silence a minority opinion when it's an opinion they don't agree with. So, you know, anyway. But it's just, but you just never, that is a thing you're never going to bring people around on. So, you know, I'm just, I'm taking a little, I'm taking like a one-year vacation from caring about it.
Well, a homeless man allegedly stabbed a Manhattan subway passenger in the head with a pen after she angrily snatched away his cigarette lighter. Caroberto Cordero, 35, tried to light a cigarette in front of Evelyn Seeger on the southbound number 2 train as it pulled into Chambers Street Station about 9:15 a.m. this morning. During the altercation, Mr. Cordero allegedly whipped out a pen and plunged it into the 45-year-old woman's head. Police were called.
Into her head? What kind of pen is this?
I guess if you...
Is it some sort of Maximus mole pen that can drill to the middle of the earth?
I guess it depends on what part of the head you stab them in.
I don't think
so.
I suppose
if you stabbed at someone's head and it went up and under their scalp.
I mean, if by head you mean cheek.
It would still be in their head.
Maybe.
It doesn't have to go through the skull to be in your head.
It doesn't seem like there's enough skin there to really hold a pen. That seems like a very thin covering.
Police were called and arrested Mr. Cordero on the platform. He was charged with felony assault.
His name is Caldero?
Cordero.
Cordero, okay.
Ms. Seeger was rushed to New York Downtown Hospital, where she was listed in stable condition. Service on the number 2 and number 3 lines was halted for about a half an hour.
Okay, then.
Republican Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann says she'll likely make an announcement in June on whether or not she plans to run for president. That's when the debate will likely heat up in Congress on raising the debt ceiling. Bachmann explains where she stands on the issue.
Well, I think only Donald Trump will know for sure, but it seems to me that a lot of people have been resonating with him, and so it may be.
A lot of people have been resonating with him. They've been standing next to him, and they've been vibrating at a similar rate and frequency.
I don't see how that explains where she stands on the debt ceiling.
Anyway. Well, you handle that part of it. I'll handle the grammatic part.
Okay. Bachmann was asked by CNN if she thinks Donald Trump is a serious candidate.
I'll make an announcement probably in June. I think it's important to make it by then because there's an Iowa straw poll. I was born in Iowa, and in fact, I'm a seventh generation Iowa.
Oh, God.
I've been there. I've been in New Hampshire. I've been in South Carolina.
So
and
it begins.
It's been a lot of excitement that's happened.
Oh, God. And the gates of hell have opened. This is the thing. I think this is maybe where This is where I split with a lot of people who I think have my ideological bent. Because I'm a big bleeding heart. It's not like a big, but I have no. It's not that I have no difference with her, but it's like I don't care. I give a rip about her ideology. It doesn't matter. I mean, who cares? I mean, my thing is. That's not what irritates me. That's not why, as much as I love elections, as much as I just revel in them, you know, like some sort of long, like year-long Super Bowl, when I do get burned out on it and I get tired of it, it's not because she's just saying something that's just like insane or bigoted or horrible or whatever. It's because I have to start hearing crap like no matter what fly speck of a goddamn town she happens to be in, she has some like deep family roots to the holler, you know, that really she's... Everything becomes like an I am a donut speech, where no matter where you are, it's like, you know, when my grandpappy used to sit me on the front porch of this general store, well, he was done a whittling a stick, you know, and it's fiddle-dee-dee, and it just makes me want to hang myself.
You grew up in Detroit. Seriously. Don't say fiddle-dee-dee.
You know, no matter where you are, it's like you have, you're there, you know, inside. You're, I am, you know, inside, I am a Milwaukeean, or wherever it is you happen to be.
I like Michelle Bachmann because she has crazy eyes. So you just kind of know that at some point she's going to just go off the rails.
Yeah, I keep looking for like a Bachmann Turner Overdrive pun that I can make, and there's just but I'm waiting. It depends on who her running mate's going to be.
Well, Bachmann says, although this soundbite might not, have anything to do with anything either.
Is this two?
Bachmann says she'll make the final decision in a couple of months. Yes,
I'll make an announcement probably in June. I think it's important to make it by then because there's an Iowa straw poll. I was born in Iowa, and in fact, I'm a seventh generation.
That sounds wrong.
Iowa.
No, this one actually is right. I see what happened here is that...
There's two different sets of cuts for the Bachmann story.
That's one was the...
All right, well, let's try it again. Well, let's just play the first cut as the third cut, since we're off by one.
Let's see where she stands on the debt ceiling.
I am not inclined to vote for raising the debt ceiling. That's what I'm hearing from people across the country. So what it means is that we pay all of our debts and obligations first, and then we prioritize the spending afterwards.
Okay. All right.
All right, then.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. You can get this program later on today as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. You can also get it via iTunes or as a mobile stream to your handheld device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. Today, we'll talk to Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Also, Taser Watch, Democracy in the March, and we'll do a top five, the top five songs to which I was subjected by my parents as a younger man. That is at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's look at the world of science.
All right, let's see. Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by our good friends at Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or calling 503-252-1609. That's 503-252-1609. By the way, we're talking to a... Hold on, you caught in a curtain back there.
Oh.
All right. I was talking to Joe Squires this morning, and I believe he is going to be he's going to be rolling out some sort of, like, electrical disaster photo of the week sort of feature or something that he's going to be putting on our website. It's going to be awesome. Yes, that's exactly what I said. It's like no, we get a lot of people that call us out there, and it's like, they've just set the entire thing on fire, and it's all melted down to a cube. And I was like, that's fantastic. Not for them, but for us.
Yes.
And for you, but not for them. For everybody who's not them, it's awesome. For them, no. You, yes. Us, yes. That. Goo goo gajube. Anyway, so he's going to be rolling out a sort of like a disastrous photo of the week from just people get a junction box and they just decide that they can just either put everything in. You know, it's like one of those where everything just looks like a tenement building in Yugoslavia, where it's like 75 electrical cords and they're all going into like an orange cable that's going out the window down the street to like the back of a guy's freezer, you know, on the other block, who has no idea that he's just been powering half of the neighborhood, you know, for 3.5 years. So things like this happen a lot. You don't want to be that guy. You're probably not that guy. I mean, I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts, as they say, you're not that guy. But it doesn't mean that you necessarily have the time or the training or even really just the inclination to be fixing all that stuff yourself. When it comes to wiring, when it comes to electricity, when it comes to upgrading or installing, if you're going to be you're doing the thing that my parents did where it's like as soon as a kid would move away from home, they would just destroy the bedroom so the kid couldn't come back. Sort of like when you lose weight, you burn your fat pants, you know, just like burning the bridge behind you. So it's like my sister actually just like went to get the mail or something one day. It's like, oh, I'm going to go to the store and buy some celery. You know, my dad was just in there with a sledgehammer just knocking down the walls. You do that, it's like, you know, it's not just that you're going to, like, eventually hit a stud with a hammer. You're eventually going to hit a thing that'll just blow your toes off. So you don't want to do that. If you're going to be screwing around with electricity, just screw around with it to the extent that you pick up your phone, your cell phone. You dial Squires Electric, 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And they are proud sponsors of this Science on the March. Here is Don Taylor.
Researchers from Australia and Japan have successfully teleported wave packets of light, potentially revolutionizing quantum communications and computing. The team, led by researchers at the University of Tokyo, say this is the first ever teleportation or transfer of a particularly complex set of quantum information from one point to another. They say it will make possible high-speed, high-fidelity transmission of large volumes of information, such as quantum encryption keys, via communications networks. Professor Eleanor Huntington of the School of Engineering and Information Technology at UNSW's Canberra campus explains that teleportation, the transfer of quantum information from one location to another using normal classical communications, is a fundamental quantum communication technique. She said it relies on having two things. One is the normal fiber optic internet or even copper cables, and the other is a shared resource between the sender and the receiver that could have been shared at any time in the past. We call that entanglement. Huntington said the idea of quantum teleportation has been around for about 10 years, but has been difficult to put into practice. They did it by teleporting the wave packets of light in a Schrodinger's cat state. In the famous thought experiment of the 1930s, a cat would be placed in a sealed box with a device containing atomic material. A Geiger counter was included to measure radiation. Should something happen, the Geiger counter would trigger the release of cyanide gas, which would kill the cat. The idea was that it was impossible to know whether or not the cat was alive or dead without opening the box and observing it. And until that happened, both realities existed. This became known as superposition. Schrodinger is said to have devised the experiment to ridicule the emerging theories of quantum physics. But since then, physicists have found many examples of superposition in the quantum world.
You see, this is where scientists are just making stuff up. Just because you don't know the answer to something doesn't mean that they're all simultaneously true. That's just wrong. That's like saying, you know, I don't know for sure that your shoes are, you know, are not filled with cottage cheese right now, but it doesn't mean that they simultaneously are and are not. That's just wrong. That's just dumb. That's what my mom would call being a little too smart for your own good.
Well, apparently, scientists do take normal macroscopic objects that they think and know and understand pretty well, put them into a quantum superposition,
whatever.
Which is kind of weird.
There's no such thing as a quantum superposition.
And they refer to that as Schrodinger's cat.
No, there's just nothing. That is a story that they've made that up just to see if they can get you to read it. Or as Seamus said, we are not just broadcasting the Thomas Gill Show.
Well, anyway.
Maybe we're doing both. And yet not doing either.
How would you know? The National Institutes of Health and the Alzheimer's Association revised the guidelines for identifying Alzheimer's disease on Tuesday so that patients can be diagnosed before full-scale dementia sets in. The changed criteria could double the number of Alzheimer's diagnoses in the U.S. Researchers have classified two early stages of the disease, which currently afflicts about 5.4 million Americans, causing cognitive impairment and memory loss. The first, or preclinical phase, predates the onset of symptoms. The second phase occurs when cognitive problems are just beginning to manifest. Health officials hope to use blood tests, brain scans, and spinal taps to predict Alzheimer's before it's too late to explore experimental treatments. The new guidelines are also intended to help families come to terms as early as possible with a difficult and debilitating illness. And the cynical part of me thinks, and also paves the way for people to sell more drugs to people that think they might get Alzheimer's.
I'm all for that.
Actually happens.
Bring it on. Sell me whatever you got. Doesn't matter. I don't even care if they're not approved. You know, even if they're just sort of, if they're on their way to someday kind of being approved. The idea that somehow that like they've just filled us full of drugs and it's a bad thing. You of all people, Don. I mean, really, talk about biting the hand that medicates you. Jesus. Who are you to dispute the idea that drugs make you a better, happier person? I mean, really.
Okay.
I'm just saying, like, you know, it doesn't seem like you really need an excuse to get most Americans to take a lot of drugs.
And no, you don't.
It seems like you would have to agree that drugs have made your life better, and I don't mean that in a snarky way.
No, I do agree.
So
but are you saying that you don't think that that most drugs are overprescribed and that?
Well, what do you mean overprescribed? Western medicine is
doctors prescribe medications before they look at other alternative treatment plans.
Well, when you say an alternative treatment plan,
like dietary vitamin treatments, you know, exercise. I mean,
I think if there's a drug that for all intents and purposes that to a large degree does what they say it does, like who cares? I mean, if they give you a drug and they say, well, it'll do this, and it just flat out doesn't do that, well, then that's something else. Then that's just fraud. That's just selling you a thing that does. That's selling you a car that has no engine. If they sell you a drug and they say, it'll do this, and you take it and it does that, where's the problem?
Well, I think it could be argued that the problem sometimes is that people have certain symptoms, like they're pre-diabetic, they have high cholesterol, what have you. And rather than explore a change in diet and lifestyle, they're just immediately prescribed a drug.
Well, I'm not disputing that, but that's not the fault of anybody who makes or sells or prescribes drugs. I mean,
well, is the fault of the people who prescribe them if they don't.
No, because it's all about you. If you go in and you're a patient, and the doctor says, "Well, hey, you're a huge bloated mess who eats Cool Whip every day, you know, for breakfast, you know, and so as a result, you're huge and diabetic. Here's a pill." If you just say that and go, well, that's great. This must mean I don't actually have to exercise or eat sensibly. Then you're too stupid to live. That's not my problem. And it's not the problem of the guy prescribing a medication. I mean, look, if you accidentally set yourself on fire because you insist on smoking in bed, the guy who prescribes the thing to fix your burns isn't the problem. It's the problem is that you continue to smoke in bed.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The guy who prescribes the drugs is also a guy who is supposed to be invested in making you a healthier person. He's a physician.
I think any physician would tell you. A doctor's never going to tell you diet and exercise are unimportant. I mean, every doctor in the world, every doctor you go to for everything will tell you, just as a matter of course, hey, you should also exercise, you should also eat sensibly. Also, you know, don't smoke in bed or whatever. They all tell you that. But they also say, like, hey, but we've also got this. That is what is part. And I'm not, and I don't mean this in a sarcastic way. That is really one of the great things about Western medicine and living in America. Is they say, look, yeah, you know, you should eat right and you should exercise and you should, you know, blah, 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 blah. Hey, by the way, we've also got this George Jetson pill you can take. It's up to you. And then you, as presumably a thinking, mature, rational, intelligent adult, can weigh and decide for yourself. How is it that guy's fault if you're just taking the easy way out and it makes you grow a third arm? It's not drug dealers' fault that junkies are junkies, and it's not the doctor's fault that somebody can't be bothered to eat sensibly. I mean, seriously, at what point do we have to take responsibility for our own actions?
Well, it's not... Okay, we don't have time to discuss this.
I'm just saying, you know, the idea that like Western medicine is somehow... You're somehow bad, you know, is just, you know... I'm just saying, you know...
We don't have time to discuss this right now.
Okay.
A new study suggests that more than 40 fish species in the Mediterranean could vanish in the next few years. The study released Tuesday by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature says almost half the species of sharks and rays in the Mediterranean and at least 12 species of bony fish are threatened with extinction due to overfishing, pollution, and loss of habitat. Commercial catches of bluefin tuna, sea bass, hake, and dusky grouper are particularly threatened. And the study by the Swiss-based organization said the Mediterranean Eastern Atlantic population of the Atlantic bluefin tuna is of particular concern. They cited a steep drop in the giant fish's reproductive capacity due to four decades of intensive overfishing. Japanese diners consume 80% of the Atlantic and Pacific bluefins caught, and two tuna species are especially prized by sushi lovers.
Dusky groupers are the chicks who have sex with Earth, Wind, and Fire. I'm just saying.
Okay.
That's true.
I'm done with science.
Really? I'm done with it. I renounce science.
That's science.
All right. Take
that, science.
There you go. This has been Science of the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. That's 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. 503-252-1609. All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at... I think there's some sort of like the... I think the wall between this show and the Rick Emerson Show is rather porous today, and things are just sort of leeching through. The Rick Emerson Show next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where I swear to you, we don't just spend the whole day playing It's Raining Men. I mean, would that I could.
Oh.
I am...
Could we someday?
I am apparently a flirty little minx, according to listener Jenny.
Yes.
Let's see. Democracy in the March coming up next hour. Also, Taser Watch. Let's see. Mr. Aaron Mesh is going to be here from Willamette Week, and we'll do the top five. Top five songs to which I was
Will he actually be here as opposed to being on the phone?
I don't know. Am I my Aaron's keeper?
I don't know.
I don't know. He'll be here. He'll call. The mustache is the same either way. I mean, you can imagine it if you can't see it. You can imagine running your fingers along its bristly surface. That's really all you care about. He's just a mustache to you. Aaron is a mustache delivery system to you, Don.
Well, kind of, yeah.
Let's see. And the top five songs to which I was subjected by my parents as a child. Here is Don Taylor.
A man behind the wheel of a stolen car plowed through crime scene tape near the Lloyd Center Mall, where a 14-year-old was shot in the head Monday. When officers, those things don't have anything to do with each other.
No.
When officers found the driver, identified as Kevin Singleness, they said he had his pants is unzipped and a pornographic magazine laying on the passenger seat.
His pants were unzipped
and he had a pornographic magazine laying on the passenger seat.
Of course. Well, how are you supposed to get at that if it's all closed up?
And that was, of course, when he drove a stolen car through crime scene tape at Lloyd Center, where I'm assuming the crime scene tape was there because they were investigating the 14-year-old who'd gotten shot in the head.
Well, that tape can be hard to see.
He appeared in court Tuesday to face charges of driving under the influence of intoxicants, reckless driving, and public indecency. And I've put his mugshot in the Dropbox for you to take a look at and upload so that people may enjoy it. He's a fine specimen of a man. Oh, yeah. He's a good-looking fella. In that kind of... you know, a secondary character in Trainspotting sort of a way.
Awesome. You were listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, you can get it as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Here is Don Taylor.
A New York woman allegedly discovered hiding in the closet of her husband's girlfriend with a carving knife and duct tape had sinister motives, according to the Journal News.
Hard to believe.
The police found 47-year-old Lisbeth Hernandez lying in wait for the couple in the mistress's apartment in Peekskill, New York, after a neighbor spotted her climbing through a window and called 911. Hernandez, whose husband had left her a few months ago, was hiding under a pile of clothing and armed with a 30-centimeter knife, surgical gloves, and duct tape. They found bleach and garbage bags in her car.
That'll stay with you for a while.
Peekskill Police Lieutenant Eric Johansson said she had concealed herself quite well. She didn't say what her motive was. However, given the fact all these items were recovered and the fact she'd broken into the home, you have to think there was a much more sinister plan.
I think she'd been concealing herself inside the novel Gerald's Game for about 20 years.
Hernandez has been charged with second-degree burglary and third-degree criminal mischief.
Our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa, is talking about this, the guy with the car and the spanking it and the police tape and the hey-hey and the crash. She says, shockingly, the driver is a classmate of one of our listeners.
Really?
By the way, it's also posted to the Legion of News Facebook page. You can see his photo there.
At, yes.
Facebook.com/Legion of News.
Yeah, he looks a little like Bazooka Joe. Oh, if Bazooka Joe, used heroin. And
like he didn't
drove around in stolen cars with dirty magazines.
I don't know what world you live in.
Just after 2 p.m. Tuesday, police were called to the McDonald's in Cleveland for reports of several people being run over by a car. There was a large crowd there for the national restaurant chain's hiring day. Witnesses and police said the two girls started fighting in the parking lot, and the McDonald's owner and manager came out to break it up.
Oh, to break it up, sure.
One girl got into her gray Monte Carlo while the other two were still punching each other.
My God.
Witnesses said the girl...
Into a gray Monte Carlo. Well, where was this at?
This was in Cleveland, Ohio. By the way, I emailed you the link to the video. There's video
of
this.
Is that what that link is?
Yes.
I guess it says McDonald's fight. Here's the thing about this. When they say, first of all, it's two chicks punching it out. So, you know right away what kind of girls we're talking about. I mean, let's be honest. This mugshot is for this guy's fantastic. That's at rickemerson.com/pictures.
Kevin Signalness.
rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for April 20th. So there's two chicks punching it out. They get into a gray Monte Carlo. One of them gets into a gray Monte Carlo. And when they say gray Monte Carlo, what you know, but they do not say, but what is implicit from the article is that is a primer gray.
Yes.
There's no Monte Carlo is just painted gray at the dealership.
No. No, primer gray Monte Carlo. So the manager and the owner of the McDonald's had come out to try and break up the fight. One of the girls got into her Monte Carlo, started up, and then backed up, running over the owner and manager of the McDonald's and hitting several other people. She then drove off from the restaurant. The manager and the owner were taken to a medical center. And someone had videotaped it on, I guess, their phone. And so there is a video available.
Fantastic.
We should probably put that up on Facebook or something.
That's wonderful. Somebody says, I missed the Cleveland clown horn. Oh, you know, that's a thing we need to bring back at some point. It wasn't just for Cleveland, though. This is Thomas saying, I missed the Cleveland clown horn, and I'm from Cleveland. It was not just for Cleveland. We had in the Rick Emerson show, whenever there was a Florida, Florida show, we have the little Miami Vice thing. We, for the longest time, had this clown horn that we would play. It was like a bicycle horn, kind of one of those. And it was anytime there was a story from our favorite hospital and place of study, which was the Cleveland Clinic. Because that just sounded like a zany sort of, like where everybody was studying while on a unicycle. How do I do this tracheotomy procedure? But meanwhile, they had like rainbow wigs on and they were sort of, juggling, body parts. So the Cleveland Clinic, I haven't thought about that place forever.
Month over month, existing home sales have risen, but March's figure was down compared to a year ago. First time buyers made fewer purchases compared to a year ago. Kathy Fetke with Real Wealth Network says it's because they're having a hard time getting loans.
Real Wealth Network. Does she offer a patented cash flow system?
I'm sure she does.
And just 2 hours a week can double your income? That's great.
The average credit score needs to be up to 760, and that's really high. You have to have great credit, a good job history, and reserves to get a loan these days. When that loosens up, we're going to see a lot of buyers because the deals are so good.
Okay, I take it back. She sounds smart and reputable, and I also find her really hot. I don't care what she looks like. Doesn't matter.
She should be
a walrus. Doesn't matter. What's her first name? Not that I need
Kathy.
To know.
Kathy.
I mean, Kathy, Cindy.
Kathy Fetke.
Betty Lou. Doesn't matter. Kathy. All right.
Okay.
Kathy, how do you spell that?
Kathy or Fetke?
Well, either.
She's Kathy with a K, and then F-E-T-T-K-E.
F-E-T-T-K-E. But again, it doesn't really matter. She could just be flat out hideous. Ooh, and she's not. Hello. Kind of a Patty Davis thing going on there. Wow. Okay. Daddy-like. I'm sorry, was that out loud?
Sorry, it's disturbing when you do that.
Didn't mean to do that.
Yeah. Let's do entertainment news.
I know what kind of girl she is. I'm sorry, what?
Entertainment news, please.
Like, this isn't entertaining. Here's your entertainment news for Wednesday.
Movie producer Brian Grazer and Vietnamese concert pianist Chow Jang Teen... Somebody... A Vietnamese concert pianist are getting married. On September 18th, we will have been together for 5 years, she told the New York Post. We're not sure of the wedding date, but it will be in Los Angeles sometimes around the fall. I will be writing a lot of music for my wedding. It's going to be very special. Grazer's ex-wife, Gigi Levanger Grazer, wrote the book The Starter Wife, which was later turned into a miniseries and a series headlined by Deborah Messing. My favorite thing about Brian Grazer that I read once is...
So he looks like porn star Peter North.
Does he?
A little bit.
I don't know. But he's got that weird, crazy, spiky hair.
Yeah.
But I read somewhere that he would do this thing where he had these little pictures of himself, like tiny little, like 3x5 photos, and he put them in nice little frames. And whenever he was invited to someone's home for a party or an event or something, someone's really nice home, he would wander around till he found the place where they kept all their family photos, and he would pull the little picture of himself out of the pocket and, like, secretly put it up with their family pictures.
Awesome. I'm going to begin doing that.
I know. Isn't that the best thing?
That's wonderful. Good for you.
So really, all over Hollywood, there are just family photo collections on mantles that have this little picture of Brian Grazer there for no good reason.
Well, that's like long before photobombing became a thing. Mr. Sergio Aragonés from Mad Magazine, he became just like legendary among the Mad staff because they would take these huge all-staff trips around the world every year. And he became legendary among the Mad editorial and artistic staff for being able to sneak into family photographs. And so apparently there are just thousands of family photographs taken from like the 60s all the way to like just 10 or 15 years ago, where it'd be like a family of four, in Tuscany. And then, like, there's Sergio Aragonés just sort of in the background with his, like, huge beaming smile, just, like, for no reason.
And his giant Salvador Dali mustache.
Yeah. And they're, like, completely, and of course, you know, and for most of the 20th century, you know, there's no digital photography or anything. So they wouldn't presumably know about it until they got home, and they're like, who is this guy? So I just love that. That Brian Grazer thing is awesome.
Actress Paz de la Huerta, a cast member of Boardwalk Empire, was slapped with a restraining order, and she's not allowed to have any contact with former reality star Samantha Suetra. De la Huerta allegedly attacked Suetra last month at the Standard Hotel in New York City and faces misdemeanor counts of assault in the third degree, attempted assault and harassment, and criminal possession of a weapon.
Who? She plays who?
Oh, she's the slutty mistress.
I knew it. Before you even said that, I knew she was going to be the slutty mistress.
She's the crazy, not Jennifer Tilly, slutty mistress.
You know, I don't think she's a stranger to slapping. Let me put it that way.
No, I don't think so.
Slap with a restraining order, the back of a hand, anything. I think she probably knows a thing or two about slapping.
Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban is putting Magnolia Pictures and Landmark Theaters up for sale. In an email to Bloomberg, Cuban wrote that he won't sell unless an offer is very, very compelling. The New York-based investment bank Moelis & Company is coordinating the auction, and offers are expected next week. So if you've got a few billion dollars lying around and want to buy a movie distribution company and a theater chain, now's your chance.
Okay.
The medieval series Game of Thrones was renewed by HBO for a second season already.
Okay.
It's only been on once.
That surprises me because it seems like I didn't watch the entire pilot. I watched bits of it. And because it's just I should watch the whole thing. Probably this weekend I'll watch the whole thing. I'm not really the target. I am the target audience for that, but I'm not much of a fantasy fan, so I sort of have opted out of being that target audience. Anyway, but it looks fantastically expensive.
Yeah, well, the thing is, apparently, the foreign distribution has been really good as far as their sales to foreign markets. And the other thing is that I heard it was like a media expert guy saying that it's his belief that HBO is actually using this to lure people to subscribe to HBO who would not otherwise. Because two good moneymakers, geeks want to see something right now. And so they are more likely, they think, to sign up for HBO just so that they can see this, like, right, you know, when it's broadcast. And also, geeks love, they have no problem shelling out money for great big box sets of entire seasons.
Well,
and
also, and plus HBO, that is kind of their whole, that is their whole thing, is just using stuff as a lure to get you to subscribe when you otherwise wouldn't. I mean, that's,
yeah,
you know,
well, because they don't sell advertising,
right.
So it's all about subscriber numbers.
That's right, Don. But it's what's like with the only reason that I did what a lot of people did, where I would subscribe to HBO, and they must know this, where they just like sort of daisy chain it. Because as they would end one series, they would stick something else on just so you didn't, you know, because there was this whole, what they call the Sopranos effect, where the Sopranos would end for the season and they would get 80 million people returning their cable box and going, I'm done until 2 years from now, thanks.
Yeah.
And they would take like forever between seasons. So they started doing this daisy chain thing where Sopranos would end and then they would start The Wire. And then The Wire would end and they would start like, you know, they would start like a... John from Cincinnati, that wasn't on HBO.
I mean,
it was a thing like that.
Yeah.
And then they would string them end to end to end. So it seems like this is, you know, but they've never really had, I don't think HBO's had anything really overtly geeky, I mean, for a long time.
No.
I mean,
no.
It's been quite a while, I think, so.
Dame Helen Mirren suffered a speech slip-up when she swore live on the air on a BBC breakfast show earlier today, talking about her latest film, Arthur. She and presenter Sean Williams were discussing John Gielgud's part in the original film when the female host remarked on his swearing in the first film. Dressed in a demure yellow cardigan and sophisticated matching skirt, Dame Helen replied, well, in that sort of wonderful voice he had, and then she quoted one of his lines when he was swearing. She immediately realized her mistake and covered her mouth before saying, I'm so sorry. She's going to be on the red carpet this evening alongside Russell Brand for the UK premiere of Arthur at O2 Cineworld.
And this is on the BBC? One of their morning chat shows?
On one of the morning chat shows.
I don't understand why that happens in 2011. I mean, the BBC is basically the government. I mean, they fund that thing out of a huge box of like bullion or something from the royals. I don't understand why they just don't buy a delay. I mean, you know, like CBS didn't even want to buy toilet paper for us, and we had a delay. I mean, they're not that expensive. Drop the 10 grand, buy a thing that lets you bleep words. Larry King had one, and they were trying to fire that guy for 15 years. So there is no excuse now. So whenever you see something like on Fox News, where a woman, you know, there was this thing the other day where a woman was, I forget what it is, she meant to say one thing and she transposed some letters and a naughty word came out or whatever. And then there's the whole like, and the flustering and the whatever. I don't understand why you would run a network now and not just have a guy who sits there and goes, no, shouldn't have said that, blink, presses the button.
I don't know.
It's a total mystery to me.
Michael Sarrazin, best known for starring opposite Jane Fonda in the 1969 film They Shoot Horses, Don't They?, has died after a brief illness. The Quebec City-born actor also appeared in films including The Flim Flam Man, The Sweet Ride, and Sometimes a Great Notion. He can also be seen in Walter Salles' upcoming adaptation of On the Road, which stars Garrett Hedlund and Kristen Stewart. He was 70 years old. And that's all the entertainment.
There's your entertainment news for... Wednesday. It is Wednesday, April 20th, 2011. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. And you can get that for just the low cost of 32 cents a day. Somebody said, by the way, you know, a month of the Rick Emerson Show. And that is at the monthly price, $6.99. If you subscribe for a year, it's $6.66. Pretty soon, that won't even get you a gallon of gas.
No.
Really. And that's, I mean, can I just, I don't mean to be this guy. And I'm not.
And you're not going to be able to afford to drive anywhere, so you might as well stay home and listen to the radio.
You're going to be sitting on your unemployed ass, you know, just to, you know, while remembering a better, more golden time. So I won't be this guy except to make this comparison. So my wife, who does not drive a big car, by the way, I mean, if she's driving, because we're not really car people, so she has a very, you know, small passenger car. And I swear to God, Christ, it cost her like $59 or something to fill it, which, you know, I don't mean to be another guy going, and it's so hot and the humidity. But I mean,
yeah, I know.
There really is a thing where you kind of go, she said that for the first, because she's like me, where she goes, you know, gas is expensive and it's only going to get more so, and why bitch about it? You can't do anything. But she said for the first time in a long time, she did an actual double take, which is like, 59, what? And the guy just went, and then she said the guy behind the counter looked at her and went, eh, and just shrugged, like sort of a, like he's been hearing it all day from everybody. So there you go. 32 cents today, the Rick Emerson Show. 32 cents today, and of course the first week is free. So if you, you listen for 2, 3, 4 days and decide that we're just, you know, I don't know. They were actively defolding your brain or something. Then, you know, pay.
And, of course, we'll be back here again tomorrow.
That's right. We are here Monday through Friday from noon until 1 p.m. here at Cascadia.fm for Legion of News. Don Taylor, it can be heard this afternoon, 4 p.m. Pacific time for Hamfisted Radio, along with Bobby Fatboy Roberts, also at HamfistedRadio.com. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Sagler, chief of staff Cheryl Kenneco. Don't forget, you can get this program later today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at LegionofNews.com. As always, thank you for listening. We'll see you next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, and we'll see you again tomorrow at noon. Have a safe and pleasant Wednesday, won't you?